We'll get started. Pretty much 8:15 on the dot. Welcome everyone. Thank you for turning up so early on a beautiful Gold Coast morning. I didn't think I'd get this much of a turnout, 8:15 after the party, but thank you very much for coming along. My name is Paul Glavich, and as you can see by the title, this is all about AngularJS within ASP.NET. And thankfully, that's probably the last slide I have. There we go. So, AngularJS within ASP.NET. I'm an ASP.NET MVP, an insider, an author, and currently the CTO of Sasu.com, which is an online accounting application, predominantly within Australia and New Zealand. You can see my contact details up there. Now, before we go on, this the whole demo, the slide deck, everything was written in ASP.NET and AngularJS. And just to provide a bit of a spoiler, you can go there now and pretty much follow along. This has all been uploaded to Azure websites. All the source code and everything to the demos will be available for download. So you'll get the entire deck, the demos and everything that goes with it. Okay, without further ado. So what we're going to talk about, obviously, AngularJS in general. Predominantly the first part of it, and that's going to form quite a bit of it, is just getting to know it, what it is, what it can do. I'm going to try and cover a lot of stuff quickly, just so you get a broad depth of what AngularJS does. Could I just get a show of hands of who's familiar or using AngularJS today? So a few people. So the first part, you know, you might be quite familiar with. The second part is kind of using it within ASP.NET, and you know, given it's just a JavaScript framework, you'd think, well, that's kind of no big deal. And that kind of is to a degree. But as I mentioned, I'm the CTO of Sasu.com, and Sasu itself has been around for 10 years. The actual code base has progressed from, like I said, within the last 10 years. So it's quite an old code base, and there's a lot of moving parts to it. We use a lot of different JavaScript frameworks, lots of custom-built stuff, and so integrating that into something like that is a little bit more tricky. So while I will focus on using it in ASP.NET in general, it also focus on sort of bring it into application with legacy code in it. Finally, the last part will be just around tips and tricks. We'll look at things like debugging and kind of what I like and dislike and just some of the more advanced aspects of Angular. And of course, after that, there will be loud applause and super high eval scores. Alrighty, what is it? I won't spend too long on it. Basically, it's just a JavaScript framework. It's created by Google. Well, particularly a very smart team within Google. It was designed predominantly for single-page applications, which are becoming much more prevalent now. So, you know, those apps where you'll go to one page and everything will just be dynamically loaded and displayed and shifted in and out. It's designed to promote some good HTML code. So if you think about on the server side where we've got, you know, services and dependency injection and good separation of concern principles there, JavaScript has a tendency to sway from that. So the way I like to think about Angular, and one of the things I like about Angular, it tends to bring structure. I feel it brings structure to chaos. Because even with jQuery itself is pretty powerful, and all the different libraries are quite powerful. But if you try and go into an application that's perhaps been around for a little while, you'll find that HTML page have a few elements, and it's got all this magic behavior going on. You've got no idea where the hell anything is. You know, I'll go to one file, which will be dependent on another file, which is all not very clear. And so Angular attempts to address some of that, and again, bring structure to chaos. It has got a huge community. It's pretty big. I mean, given that it's a relatively new framework, it's been around for, I think, about 2 or 3 years, particularly on things like Google+. If you go onto Google+ and search for AngularJS, you'll see there's a huge community on there. There's a lot of tutorials and things at the moment, so it is gaining a huge amount of popularity. And there's the download link there, but you'll have that if you choose to download, or it'll be at the end of the slides anyway. So just in general, the structure of an Angular application, it's not clear without an example, but this is kind of the conceptual structure here. We've got our view, which is just a HTML markup. Down from that, we've got a module application that Angular likes to define up front. And that's your container for all your things like controllers and services and factories. And you see here we've got a single controller. You can have multiple, and there'll be, again, services and factories. And these are all just different components that Angular allows you to create, provide, and inject into various other components. So it's very good at separating all these little boxes out so you can have discrete bits of functionality, and that's what it promotes. to bring your application together rather than perhaps one big monolithic JavaScript file or perhaps 100 monolithic JavaScript files. Angular provides a nice way to separate that out and give you this kind of structure within your application and make it fairly obvious what it's doing. So we'll go over some of the basics very first. It is declarative by nature, and if you can just see up here. What I'm saying there, you can see we've got data ng app, and that data dash isn't strictly necessary, but it's the way you decorate some of your elements to tell Angular what to do. So I could have just said ng dash app or data dash ng dash app. It's fairly forgiving that way. But all I'm saying is that Angular demo is the module or the application container within this page, and so everything's going to happen within that container. The next one I'm saying is, all right, I'm defining a controller called basic controller, and that's going to operate over everything within that section element. And then Angular will invoke that controller for you, and it's up to you to populate things against that. As I mentioned, it's declarative. We've talked about the module. It has this concept of scope. And you can see this dollar scope and dollar root scope there. So a controller will populate some scope, in this case this dollar scope, and the scope is what provides data to the view. So it acts as a model view, not so much a model view controller, more of a model view view model, if you guys are familiar with that. Basically, the scope acts as the conduit or the glue between the controller and the HTML or the view. So you can be very controlled about what is displayed there. We've got these things called services, factories, and directives. And service and factories are similar to how you'd see services on the server side. They might provide some data or access server resources. Directives are best explained in examples, but essentially they're just some reusable components within Angular, and they allow you to do DOM manipulation. Generally within a controller, you're not supposed to do DOM manipulation because there's certain life cycle within Angular. So it'll go through and examine the DOM and take a record of what the state is, and then at the very end it checks it for changes and performs some magic with respect to data binding. If you sort of do DOM manipulation within the controller, which is kind of outside the scope of the general flow of things, you can tend to break data binding and do all kind of weird things. So it's not recommended. You can do it, and you can make it work, but it's not the general recommended approach. Finally, the data model that it uses. If you're at all familiar with things like Knockout, it requires you... Hi, how are you going? nice song, by the way. Knockout.js uses kind of an imperative, a programmatic approach, and we'll have a look at that a bit later on. By contrast, Angular just uses your traditional JSON objects, object literals. You don't have to change the way you return or operate with data in any way. So we'll just do a quick demo. And as I mentioned, all this code is all downloadable. I'll give you the resources at the end, and you can actually follow along with that link that I gave you earlier on. So what we've got here is just the top part anyway, it's just some simple data binding. So I'm typing in, and you can see that it's reflecting what's there. If we go have a look how we're doing that. And you can see I've got my ng app Angular demo, and I'm defining a controller, basic controller. To get things started with Angular, I first need to define that module. So what I'm saying is window.app equals Angular, module, Angular demo. So it marries up with this guy here. Okay, so that I'm assigning it to this variable, so that's my application container. From now on, everything will be operating from that application container, and I'll be executing methods and things off that. Here we've got some dependency lists, and I can talk about that a bit later on once we've gone into the basics a bit more. And we've got our basic controller here. So if I have a look at here. So I'm just including these files in the page. And here I'm saying, all right, window.app, which is my module, controller, I'm defining basic controller, and essentially this is a controller. So when Angular sees this, it says, all right, I need to find basic controller. Well, it's been defined here. Oh, cool. Now what I'm doing here is saying, all right, I want Angular to inject the scope in. And that, as I mentioned, that scope is what's going to be the conduit or the glue between the HTML or the view and the controller. And so then what I'm doing is saying, all right, on the scope, I'm saying, what am I equals Angular one-way binding. And if we go back to the HTML, here I'm doing double bracket, which is the one of the data binding syntax within Angular, display this variable from the scope. You notice I'm not prefixing with the scope, I'm just doing the variable. In addition, I'm doing exactly the same thing down here, but it's just an alternate way of doing it. Ng bind equals what am I? These two essentially do the same thing, which you would have seen up here. So they're both just binding to this input box. And in the input box, I'm saying, all right, my model. And I could do, you'll see all through these slides, I'm using data-ng-model. I could just use ng-model. My preference is to use the data-dash just because it's a much more, you know, HTML-friendly way of doing things. It adheres to the data-dash semantics. But you don't have to. You can do it any way you want. And I'm saying, all right, the model for this input box is the variable what am I? And that's essentially all I'm doing to get that data binding. So this guy here is doing two-way data binding to the input. So when I'm typing in, it's putting it into the variable. And these guys that were doing the one-way on the outbound are just displaying it, and it's all just being synced up nicely for us. Pretty easy stuff. A few of the other things we can do, if I'll have a look at the controller first. The other thing I'm populating here is an object literal called sumData. I've just got a text property, current date, and an amount. Nothing too spectacular. Now what I'm doing here is using just the object dot notation to display sumData amount and sumData text. I'm also displaying sumData.currentDate. However, I'm going to apply a filter or a date filter in this format. Similarly, on currentDate down here, I'm going to apply a filter of date using this format. And on the amount, applying another filter of currency type, prefixing it with a dollar. And I'm actually doing a literal, expression here. So adding 10 to amount and then displaying it as a currency, but I'm going to substitute these angle brackets here. So if we have a look at what's going on down here, you can see I'm displaying some text, date, time, the amount in currency, and again the amount with a plus 10, but with those things prefixed there. And if I'm changing this, you can see that the number's changing and it's all being displayed as you'd expect. So not a lot of work there for us to do that. We're just, again, populating that scope, the glue. Angular's taking care of the formatting for us for with these built-in filters that it comes with, and it's all just being magically reflected. The principle here, though, is that looking at the controller, you notice, you know, there's no DOM manipulation going on. We're purely dealing with data. We're populating the stuff on the scope that we want to be in the HTML. Everything else, you know, we could be doing all sorts of shenanigans in the controller and doing fancy JavaScript computations, but we'll just put something on the scope that we want to be in the view, so we can do that in a very controlled manner. Okay, these guys down here, just to demonstrate some lists and other filters, you can see we've got a list of items. If I start typing in, you can see it automatically filtering there. If we go have a look at how we're doing that, in the controller, I've just got a list of stuff, and it's just an array of objects with a key and text property. There we go down here. So what I'm doing here is on the input, I'm saying, all right, my model is a list filter variable. And I'm saying, all right, I've got a UL and an LI, and I'm doing data ng repeat, or it could just be ng repeat. This is an inbuilt directive. Say, all right, well, obviously we're going to repeat some items. And I'm saying for each item in list of stuff, which is this guy here, and essentially I could have left it at that and that'll just iterate through and I could then data bind to that and it would just display out the list, which is what I'm doing there. But additionally on that repeatable list, I'm saying, all right, I want you to apply a filter based on the text property, but I want you to filter it based off this list filter variable that we've bound to on the model, or on the scope, sorry. And that's being populated in that via that input. Does that make sense, everybody, so far? I know it's early. And so that's what's going on here. So, you know, we've just displayed, using that ng repeat directive, just displayed it out, but using the extra filter that we've applied, it's just doing that kind of filtering for us. So it's pretty easy. Again, no DOM manipulation. We've just applied some directives on the HTML. And so as I mentioned a bit earlier on, it's quite declarative, so you can see exactly what's going on here. You know what's going to happen. You know the data that's going to be populated on the scope. You kind of know where to go. You know, if you go up a bit, you can know that it's on the basic controller, so you can go to the controller to deal with it. You can see what variables it's explicitly dealing with. So it is very declarative, very explicit about what it's doing.
The
the list filter. The list filter is bound to this input here. So we're getting ng model list filter. And that is this guy here. Okay, so as we type in, Angular says, all right, take that value and whack it into the list filter variable on the scope. And so when in this directive here, it's saying, all right, filter it on the text of each of those objects in the array, but apply that list filter that's been populated onto the scope. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay, the next one is a little bit more convoluted, and I know it's just the basics at the moment, but I wanted to give a view of how good and potentially how bad it can be. Because I like Angular, but there is some aspects of it that are a bit complex. I also will say up front that there is a bit of a learning curve to it, so it can take a little bit of a time to get used to, but once you do get used to it, it does yield a lot of benefits. So in this one, I'm using a select. The model is list selection that it's binding to. And the options for that select are, again, we can say, this is the part that, while it works well, I find it a little bit obtuse in syntax. So we're saying, all right, for each item in list of stuff, and that list of stuff is that same array that we defined on the controller here, I want you to display the text, but we're going to use the key as its value. So it's kind of like reading it backwards. Oops, sorry. So for each item in list of stuff, I want to use the text. I want to display the text, but we actually want to use the key as its value. And if you have a look here, we've got key 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 on each of the text for item 1, 2, 3. And so all I'm doing then in here is just saying, all right, this list selection is what we're binding to here on the select, and I want to display what we've bound to. So if I'm changing this, you can just see that, you know, it's using the value rather than the text. I could just say text, refresh that. Item 1, item 3, so it's just showing the text there. So this is a way of being a bit more explicit in your select options about what you want to set as your value, so you can take control over the data there. And again, I find that if you go to the documentation and have a look, there's actually about 5 different ways you can express this for arrays and object literals. And that part does take a little bit of getting used to. But once you do, like I said, it is quite powerful. Okay, and the next one. Directives. We've seen a few of these, like the ng repeat, which you just saw. There are some typical directives that Angular comes with. ng show, ng click, ng class, and they're all fairly self-explanatory. I'll just take you for a quick run through, just to show you how easy they are. So we've got this ng show example here. If I click on that, it's just dynamically showing content. Now, so what I've got here is I've got a nice div. It's saying ng show is show selection. That's what it's based off, this flag on the scope. And this input of type checkbox is bound, the model is bound to show section. Okay, so these two are linked here by this value. ng show is just saying, all right, if this is true, I'm going to show it. If it's false, I'm going to hide it. Nothing else is really needed there. And so when I do this, all good. Again, no DOM manipulation going on there. Okay, the next one, ng click, as you'd expect, you know, it sort of registers clicks. You can see the counter going up, and same there. Now, here I've got, on this div, I'm saying, you'll notice I'm using a different syntax here again, ng colon click. Again, I could use data dash ng click. I could use ng dash click, just demonstrating that you can use a different syntax there. So click handler is binding to div click handler, which is a function on the scope. Similarly, the button has got button click handler, which is also a function on the scope. If we have a look at built-in directives, that one there. You can see down here, I've got button click handler, so scope button click handler equals function. I'm incrementing a count on the scope, and similarly for the div click handler. Initially, I was setting those to 0, and so it increments these items on the scope, and that's what we're displaying down here. Okay. So again, just populating some data on the scope, not doing any DOM manip, and it's just taking care of it all for us. Down here, ng class. Now, what ng class does is allow us to conditionally apply a class based on some, obviously, on some condition. So here we've got, this less than 50. If there's no item there, it's going to put that in for us and put a class that's going to make the text red. Okay, and we can put these, we can have these conditional items going on here. But as far as ng class is concerned, I'm saying, all right, for .ng class, I want you to apply, it kind of looks like an object literal here, and it kind of sort of is. I want you to apply this numeric error class if the value of isNumberValueInvalid is true. Okay, so that's just doing a conditional application of this class here. If we have a look at our controller, we've got this feedback message function. If I just flick back quickly, you'll see we're also binding to that here. So that's how it's being invoked. And here is where I pass the int, and if it's invalid, I set number invalid equals true, and I return this message. Otherwise, I set invalid equals false, and I give a few other messages. So on the scope, in the controller, sorry, I'm just populating the scope with the appropriate data, and that's being reflected in the view for us. And so I'm just setting this value true or false, and on the view, I'm just saying, well, we'll put this class on if that's true. And you can do that multiple times. I could put a comma here and do another class here and then do another flag here, that kind of thing. So what that's allowing us to do, and this is what I'll be getting to later on as well, is that all this stuff in your controller is just JavaScript manipulating data, nothing more. So you, and again, I'll go back to this a bit more later on, but it then becomes much more testable. You don't have to worry about doing fancy stuff with a DOM. All you're doing is reading, populating data on the scope, and that's it. So it then becomes quite easy to test. And that goes back to the practices that we've adopted on the server side of unit testing and integration testing. We can start to apply that to these JavaScript components in a very easy way. Finally, we've got ng class even and ng class side. You can see what these guys do here. They're just alternating, allow to apply alternate classes to rows. Just quickly in the code. Where are we? Built-in directives. I've got a UL, an LI doing an ng repeat on some list of data. And all I'm doing is saying ng class even, ng class odd. When the row is even on its index, apply that class. When it's odd, apply that class. And I've just got those defined in CSS. You know, pretty easy. Okay, services and factories. I talked about these briefly. They are very similar. This is a little bit of a not confusing concept, but they kind of do very much the same thing. It's just the way that they're invoked. A service or factory is what you'd expect on the server side. It generally just provides some data to you. The canonical example will be in terms of Angular is just doing an XML HTTP request to the server. And then that data, the controller can call on that service to give it that data. It doesn't have to worry about dealing with XML, HTTP, or whatever the semantics are of getting that data. It just says, hey, service or factory, give me that data. And then the controller goes and does stuff with it, typically puts it on the scope for display by the view. So, looking at the demo itself is not particularly exciting, but this is the concept that's going on here. I've got a main controller, and I'm going to inject a factory and a service, and the main control is going to populate the scope, which is going to go to the view. So here at the moment, and again, it's not very spectacular, I'm going to call this factory up here, and call the service. You'll see both values being incremented. And when I go to the code, that'll make a bit more sense. So at the moment, they're kind of synchronized. If I go into service factories, okay, got my app, got main controller here on this section, and I've got another controller defined on that section. And what I've pretty much done is I've created this section, just copied it down, but just use a different controller, and they're going to use almost the same code. So I've got a click here, which is going to call factory and call service on the main controller, Similarly, I'm going to call factory and call service on another controller when we click that button. And I'm just displaying the values down here. You can see they're pretty much identical. And service and factories. So in the main controller, nothing spectacular apart from, well, you know, I've got these functions defined and I've got the property values defined in the scope. We're injecting the scope, but we're also injecting the factory and the service. In another controller, which is identical, we're also injecting the scope, which is the factory, and also injecting the factory and the service. If we look at these guys here, the factory for a start, we've got window app, which is our module that we defined before. Factory, I'm going to create the factory. And this is essentially a function, which has got some initialization code in it. And then we're returning this object literal, which contains the property and the method that we call on that factory. For the service, it's a little bit different. We've got, you know, our module, service, creating the service. But this time we're putting the property and the function, assigning it to this. So when we're creating a service in a factory, I mean, they can perform pretty much the same thing. And that syntax difference that you see there is pretty much the only difference. It's just about the way that they're constructed. This is done via a new function. So, you know, your traditional JavaScript new. So that's got your constructor function there. Whereas the factory just returns an object literal. The main difference from a practical perspective is that you can do some initialization in here if you choose, and that obviously would be typically more complex, but it just allows you a bit more flexibility in creating your factory, I guess. So you can prep up some things before returning your object that's used as the factory slash service. Okay, so that's all there is to it, to creating a factory and or a service. There's a difference there. And when we're using it in the controller, let's say the main controller, again, they're being injected, and I'm using the factory.perform service and the service.perform service. That's it, it's pretty easy. The reason that I've got two here is you can see that they're both being injected into the controllers, one main controller, one another controller. They're actually singletons, so the same instance of those services or factories are being injected into each of those controllers. Different controllers, same instance of the service or factory. That's why you see these values are synchronized there. Does that make sense at the moment? So we're starting to break apart that, that structure they showed at the start. So we've got our view scope, we've got our controller. We're now extracting out the data access, as ridiculously simple it was in that case, into our service or factory. And there's no, you don't have to use a service and a factory. You can just use factories in your app. There's no hardcore rules around that. But we've started to extract that out, and we've created yet another component, fairly easy to read, probably quite easy to test too, because we've extracted that out. We've got all these components starting to form within our application, and we're just starting to assemble them together how we need them. And so with those service and factory, obviously, we can just inject those into any number of controllers that we want. Built-in services. There are a lot. I'll deal with just one for now, which is probably the most popular one, which is $HTTP, which Angular provides. That's obviously for making HTTP requests. There is a $resource service, which requires an extra file to include, which is kind of a higher level abstraction on top of this $HTTP service, which I'll show you in a second. And it makes things a little bit easier, but to be quite honest, I quite like this $HTTP service. I still find it simple enough to use. So if we go have a look at that, and because it's such a spectacular demo, let's just jump into the code first. Built-in services. Okay, we'll go have a look at our controller. So we've got a controller which has got a scope and this data factory injected into it. I'm setting some values on the scope. And on the scope, I've got this getData function. Just going to set a progress indicator value. On our data factory, I'm going to say get data. And then, once you've got the data, execute this function. So this then is part of this this promise notation that you see. You've seen it probably in a bunch of other JavaScript frameworks as well, but AngularJS uses it quite extensively. So you're just saying, all right, execute this function. Then, after you're done, execute that function there. If we have a look at our data factory that we're injecting, it's pretty easy. So we've got window app factory, calling it data factory. I want Angular to inject this $HTTP service for me. And then I'm going to return a get data function, and it's going to return this $HTTP, and we've set some parameters in here, the method, obviously get, URL, and don't want it to cache it. And we've got a post data function, which accepts a payload, returns $HTTP, method URL data. What it's returning here is a promise. A promise, obviously, to perform this action, and then return whether it's success or failure. And that's what we're doing here. So on the data factory, we're executing get data, and the promise is saying, all right, then execute that guy here. When we're performing a post, we're setting some stuff on the scope, and we're doing a different way of dealing with the promises this time. So we do a post data, so the data factory, you know, passing this data to post data. But on success, so dot success, I want you to execute that. On error, I want you to execute that. Okay, so it's just a different way of accessing it. On the one above, I can have a look at the result here. I can have a look at the result status code and try and determine whether it's an error or not. So it's a bit more low level. Up here I can do a dot success or dot error. It's a bit nicer to use. And just looking at this in action, just to show that I'm not playing, get data from server. Oop, should have gone to net for that one, sorry. Let's clear that, do it again. Okay, you can see down here, I did a get, and send me the post. And there we go. I know, awesome demo. Looking at the controller for that, there's an example API controller that we're using, so get stuff and post stuff. This is just a standard web API controller. Nothing particularly good here. Putting it asleep just to simulate some work was going on. Okay. Also, if I choose to throw an exception, what happened there? Sorry about that. You can see we got a 500 error down there. It said, sorry, I blew up. So it nicely handled it. That was that dot error portion that you see here. Okay. Is that okay with everyone so far? Any questions on that? Okay, everybody's still awake. Oh, yep. Down there on the floor. Sorry, I couldn't see you. Yeah, the question was, is there a way to add a global error handler? And the answer is yes. It's a bit more complex than just what I've shown you here, but you can use an interceptor, resource interceptor within Angular, and it allows you to inject your own bit of code in all HTTP requests, so request and response, and you can intercept that and deal with it in a global manner. Certainly the case. It is a bit more complex than what I've shown you here, though, but it's on the documentation. Up the back there.
Can you do templating at all for the UI stuff?
Templating?
Yes.
Yes. What did you have a specific example in mind? Yep. Yes. Yeah, you can do that. That's that's the partial views and routing, which I'll show you a bit later on. I think that'll answer your question anyway. Okay. Oh, here we go. Speak of the devil. Okay, routing. Routing is one of the more powerful aspects of Angular, and basically allows you to load in a partial view from the server, and it'll perform data binding and all the usual stuff within that view itself. And it also fully supports back button, browser history, that kind of thing. Easiest way is to look at a demo. So what I've got here, Again, you know, UI is outstanding. The demo, okay, let's have a look at routing. So routing, we've got our Angular demo app. We've got some hrefs defined here, and we've got this ng view. So what's going to happen, and I'll show you the routing config, it's going to try and load up view 1, view 2, view 3, and Angular is going to put the contents of that in this ng view. So this ng view is just a marker element here. But without that, the AngularJS routing doesn't work. So even though you might have the config set up, you need to ensure that you've got your place marker element in there so it knows where to place content. Now, if we have a look at routing, see, that's where I went wrong. I moved that out accidentally. Okay, in my routing folder, I've got partial view 1. Actually, let's just zoom in. Partial view 1, 2, and 3. There's a partial view controller. I'll show you the routing config in a second. And some other controllers and partial views. My partial views are just very simple. There's a bit of data binding going on there. And they're just a little bit different for each one, just so you can see that I am, in fact, loading up something different. And I've populated some stuff on the scope, which I'll show you soon. The main magic bit is in our configuration. We're saying window app config. Angular, I want you to inject in route provider. And I'll talk about this syntax a bit later on. I want you to inject in route provider for me. And I'm using route provider. I'm going to say when /view. I want you to go to this URL, this template URL, and I want you to use this controller. And I want you to use that controller for all these other ones as well, but when it's view 1, 2, or 3, I want you to use load in partial view 1, partial view 2, partial view 3. Okay, when there's this on the URL, and this is actually being, this is just a variable that we can put on there and extract out, I want you to use this URL and this select view controller. So I'll deal with the first three first. So if I, again, call up here, let's clear that out. Oh, that's better. Call up view one. Okay, you can see it's loaded down there. Call up view two. Call up view three. Go back to view two, all good. So it's only loaded in for the first time. And also now, when I'm going backwards, I can, I'm getting full history support. I can put in view three there. It loads that in. I can put in blah, 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 blah there. And if we go to view one, you can see that's been also reflected there. And again, full history support. Does that answer your question at the back there?
Yes. Yep.
So that's actually quite powerful. I don't know if anybody else has ever tried to hook up the history support. Yes?
Does it have support for
HTML5
history?
Yes, it does. That's a flag you can set in the configuration. But it's, you know, it has, can have problems with some earlier browsers, so you can elect to turn that on. I think from memory it's just HTML5 enable equals true on the, in the config, but it definitely does support it. You can also change the way the URL is formed. You don't have to use like the hash bang. You can put in, you can substitute any characters, so you can configure it to use whatever you want. Also, so in the config, you saw that I had select view number, so I'm going to just put in that there, select, without a view number, so lucky view is not specified. Again, nothing too spectacular, but this is the view that we're trying to load, the select view controller, which it was defined to load, saying, all right, I want you to inject the route, and a scope and the route, sorry, and what I'm going to try and do is, say, using the route, if there's one available that's current, in the params, if it has this view number, which you saw in the configuration, that was there, then use that. Else, just say it's not specified. And so that's what it's doing now. If I put in, you know, one there, the lucky view was one. Hello, whatever. If I hit back, whoop, go away. One, not specified. So history support. Again, if you ever tried to implement history support using other libraries, you know, the other libraries make it reasonably easy, but this is, you know, you haven't really had to do anything explicit apart from use routing. It's quite easy. Okay. Directives. Yes, AngularJS is superpower. We've seen a lot of them so far. NG show, NG repeat. Pretty much everything is defined as a directive in Angular. Directives are very special in that they, throughout the life cycle of an Angular application or an Angular processing operation, so it'll go through, it'll examine the DOM, it'll look at all the watch handlers that are there. It'll then execute all these directives in a particular phase of that that allow the DOM to be manipulated and do all the hairy stuff, and then later on it'll check to see what's changed, and that's when it applies any data binding semantics to it. So that's why generally you shouldn't manipulate the DOM in the controller, because it'll be outside of that phase and you'll find that your data binding will go a bit screwy sometimes. It can still work, and there's ways to make it work, but it's generally not recommended. However, we can create our own directives, which is the interesting part, and we can make them work with attributes, element classes and comments. So far you've seen mostly attributes with data dash, ng dash, that kind of thing. But they can be custom elements, custom HTML elements, classes and or comments. If you're using custom elements in IE, you need to use a shim, because IE tends to not recognise them unless they're already as part of the DOM anyway. So the demo page for this has at least some shapes on it, so it's a little bit more interesting. What I'll do is I'll have a look at the code first. Now, directives, where are we? There we go. Okay. For the button here, I've got data dash simple clicker. And later on down here, I've also got an element called simple clicker. And then I've got a div with a class equals simple clicker. Okay, and all that's going to do, as you can no doubt be aware, is going to allow it to be clicked. This div can be clicked, and so can this one. Okay, nothing too spectacular, but the important part is, if we have a look at this simple clicker directive, saying, all right, on our module there, I'm creating a directive called simple clicker. I'm restricting it to attributes, elements, and classes. And then I'm creating a link function, and I'm saying, all right, on the element, bind to the click function and alert click, which you just saw. And that's all that directive is. Now that I've included, because it's allowed to be an attribute, I can do it in attribute form. Because it's I've allowed it to be an element, I can do it in element form. And you notice that the name's been changed there. So even though, and this is part of the pattern of Angular, I've got like a camel case going on there, it will transform it to a dash lowercase there. So I've got a custom element as part of that directive. Okay, and also I can use it as a class if I want to there, although I don't particularly like that, and I'm... My preference is to always use attributes, but you can do custom elements as well. But the important part about that is that you've got all that three functionality, excuse me, for that simple directive. And that's quite verbose here. You know exactly what's going on with this custom element, and similarly with that attribute there. It's a reusable component. I can include that in any application or any page and just apply that to it. So it's quite handy that way. The thing that I don't like about a directive is, as you get more complex, it can be a little complex to create them. This kind of syntax here is a little bit weird, and I will say, as it gets more complex, when you want to do weird things with the scope, there's weird characters that you need to inject and use, and it can get it quite complex. Some good documentation for it, but for the most part, if you're creating just basic directives, it's really good. I've got an example of a bit more complex directive. And this one is my widget directive. And I'm going to restrict it to attributes, elements, and this M represents comments. Yes, that's right, comments. It's going to use this template. It's going to replace any elements. So when you apply this widget directive to something, whatever markup you put it on, it's going to replace it with this template. And what I'm doing here, and I won't go into that in too much detail just yet, is I'm picking out some of the attributes, adding some CSS items to it, and if it's going to be a circle or a disk, I'm going to create a canvas element and draw some stuff. Looking at this here, I've got custom HTML, just saying widget. It's going to be a square, and it's going to be clickable. Via the attributes, data-widget equals circle, and it's clickable. And via comments, and I just don't like the syntax, but it's possible, directive in a widget, and it's going to be a disk. And that's what we get here. The clickable part of it makes it do all this sexy stuff. And that's just what I've implemented in the directive to be a custom behavior. So if I wanted, let's say, this guy to be a circle instead. There we go, I've got a circle. Okay, so that's, I think that's pretty cool actually, because you know exactly, it's very descriptive, it's reusable, you know exactly what's going on. There's no magic, there's no div class equals my awesome widget and 58 JavaScript classes that link in some weird sort of fashion that combine to create the behavior. So you can just contain that all within the directive. And obviously the directive can also, link in 50 other JavaScript classes if you want, but yeah, it's up to you. Sorry, what was the question? Yep. Pretty much, yes. Yeah, and again, with the custom elements that you see up the top there, within IE, you're going to need the IE shim that's going to create any custom directives as elements in the IE's DOM first, so that it actually works. Plus, I just like Data Dash. It just feels nicer to me. But it's entirely up to yourself. The shim that you can download for Angular for IE is available on the Angular site, so it's just a file you can include, and it'll work fine. I really don't like this syntax. You could do it. It just seems ugly to me. But you can do it. Going back to the directive, if I was to take off, let's say, I don't want to allow element behavior, I'll just refresh that. You can see one disappears because it just doesn't understand what that custom HTML was. This code in here, I won't go through it in too much detail because you can download all this. It's all freely available for you. It's just picking off the attributes of each of those items and setting flags, whether it's a square or clickable. If it's a square, I'm setting some CSS to make it look like a square. If it's a circle or disk, creating a canvas element and drawing that. If it's clickable, then I make it clickable. I bind to the click event and I just do a bit of animation using jQuery. Everybody okay with that so far? Yeah, I like that. I think direct is a really powerful feature of it. Forms and validation. How are we doing for time? 9, okay. Okay, forms and validation. It works. It is a little bit clunky at the moment. They are working at improving that, but it does work quite well. It basically, the premise behind it, it'll dynamically add and remove classes whether an element or a form is valid or invalid, and then you can apply some CSS rules to it. Within your controller, you can interrogate the form to see whether it's valid or invalid. If we have a look at a demo, you can see I've got this form here. We've got please complete the form. The border's all red. It's got some red stuff going on here, and we've got a nice little symbol showing that this one's invalid. This is done via a directive, which I'll show you soon. If I click on that, it says please enter your phone number. Now we've got some data that I'm showing down here, and this is kind of what's going on behind the scenes. This form here, and I'll show you that in code. If we go to forms and validation, where am I? Form validation, there we are. So we've got form. With the name of my form. And so on the scope, what Angular is doing is saying, all right, on the scope, my form, invalid, is true. This dollar $valid is false. If you see, and you can see I've got a name field on my form, and valid currently is false. If I put something in there, you can see that value turns to true, and this red has gone. So what's happening here, we've got our input. Oh, sorry, we've got our form. We've got a no-validate attribute on there. I'll talk about that in a second. The controller is form controller, and when you hit submit on that form, it's going to execute that method on the controller. On our inputs, we've got a required element, and the model is bound to person details object and the name property. This input is also required, that's the age. It's also bound to the age on the personal details object. Our phone is a little bit more complicated. We're saying, all right, we're using the NG required directive because we're doing a conditional required. So only be required if the age is greater than or equal to, greater than or equal to 14. Data validation error mark is that directive that I showed you here. So that only appears when it's invalid, and it's saying, all right, use that class, and that's the message it's going to use when it's invalid. We're binding to the phone on the person details object, and also the pattern that we want to use, NG pattern, is that one there. So essentially minimum of 8 digits. So if I'm going across here and going, boom, 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 boom. Okay, that goes, and you can see that everything's gone green. We've got a save button. Invalid is false on the form. Okay, so it's this is Angular populating all this stuff for us. And all I'm really doing is I've got some classes. Actually, I should just drill down. Let's make this one invalid. And we'll inspect that element. And where should we go? So looking at the style. You can see here we've got ng dirty, ng invalid. These are all the things that Angular is placing on that element for us as we're typing data in. So all I'm doing is in the CSS, I'm using a container and drilling down to the .ng invalid class and setting the background to red. And same for the other classes as well, or the other elements, sorry. This ng dirty means that data has actually been put in there, so it's actually a dirty value. If we didn't touch that input element, it would have ng-pristine as a class. So you can examine the what's happened with the element through all these different classes that Angular has applied. Okay, so if I hit enter on here, it's saying, all right, it's invalid. If I put something in, hit enter on there, it's saying data can be saved. And that's happening in the controller. Just briefly jump in there. Form validation, form controller. So up here, I just populated some defaults on the scope. That save form was on the markup that you saw, which was right there. So when it submits, we call save form. And that happens whether it's valid or invalid. And this is the bit that feels a bit dirty to me. I'm saying, all right, if this, my form that's on the scope is invalid, then just return or show that it's invalid. Else we can continue and do something. I would imagine grab that form data, which would be on the scope, and post it off to the server to be saved. So you have to take some corrective action in the controller to do it. It's obviously not rocket science. It's pretty easy to do, but it still feels a bit odd. And this, dollar invalid, dollar valid off the form name also feels a bit odd to me. However, works quite well, and we've used it to great effect in the Sasu application. I'll show you a bit later on. Just very quickly, this is a bit more of a complex directive, just to give you an idea. This is that this guy. This one here. This is some of the code that's associated with that. I'm using putting in some HTML, which will include an image as well as a tooltip directive that's also part of Angular UI, and then just displaying that dynamically. However, now that that's defined, I can use that in any one of my pages or applications. And if you choose to download the source code, you'll also get access to that directive too. Okay. Moving along. Internationalization and localization. I won't spend too long on this one. However, it does support it for the date, time, number, and currency filters. And there's this ng pluralized, which I'll talk about in a second. But basically, if we've got, we're going to display some dates and numbers, and the current locale is in US. Let's say I want something else. Oops, sorry. Hold on. Now, let's go down here. So what I've got is I've just got some stuff on the scope, obviously current date, time, and amount, which I'm displaying as a number or a currency, and the date is the full date. Now by default it would be ENUS. The way to change that is, let's say I want to make it Arabic. I'm going to, go down here. I'm going to include this guy here, and these are all available for download from Angular, but essentially you just need to include a localization file, and there's probably about 100, 150 available. So if I save that, you'll see that gets changed. So the only currently, what you need to do is determine what kind of locale you need to use on the server and probably conditionally inject that onto the page or include that on the page. So that's really all there is to it. As long as you're using the general filters within Angular, it'll take care of, and you've got the correct locale file included, it'll take care of formatting it for you. The other thing I wanted to mention is pluralization. Obviously, in different languages, the way you pluralize things vastly differs in the way it goes about it. So in order to try and accommodate that, we have this ng pluralize directive. So if I have a look at my controller at the moment, I've got this attendees array, which is just a series of numbers. And in here, in this ng repeat, I'm just going to loop through it and say, all right, for each for each attendee count in attendee. So this is going to be one of those numbers in this array. And what this guy is doing in this li is saying, all right, I'm using this as the value that I want to pluralize, and I'm going to use these forms of pluralization, this attendee forms. So currently, I've got this defined. So if the locale ID is ENUS, which currently it isn't, it's going to be using these forms of pluralization. If it's 0, we're going to put in the text none. If it's 1, we're going to put in 1 lonely nerd. If it's 2 or 3, we've got duo or trio, and we're putting in this, you know, bracket syntax to display the number. If there's a few of them, we have that many people, and if other than that, we've got that many tech geeks. And you can see that's what's happening down here. Okay, so it's just a way of pluralizing things. If I put it back to, where are we? Put this back in. So we're back to the US style. And refresh that. We're using the different form of pluralization, which comes from here. Okay, and there's a link again on the from the Angular site, which you can go to, which shows you what all these different, because some locales don't have the few defined as part of their pluralization, some do, so you can make a call as to what to do there. So you still have to do a bit of work if you were to deal with pluralization in a detailed way, but the basic engine is there. I would expect that to get a bit more comprehensive as time goes on. Minification, just briefly on this, this one's quite easy, but you need to make sure that you do this. Most of the examples that you see around with Angular are not minification safe, and in fact most of the ones I've shown you are not minification safe. You need to make sure that you do build it so that all's minification safe, and I'll show you why. So if we go to this controller, let's say we're defining this controller here, and we've got this function and we want all this stuff injected. That one there isn't minification safe. And the reason that is when it gets minified, this guy will become, you know, A or Z, this one will become D, this one will become A, it'll all get compressed up together. So when Angular goes to do its injection, it has no idea that it wants location, route, and some service. The way to get around that is to do this array kind of syntax here. So what I'm doing here is saying, all right, I've got these string literals in the order that they need to be injected, so string literals won't be minified. I've got location, route, and some service. And then I define my function, location, route, and some service. And you can call those variables anything you want, but generally keeping them the same obviously avoids confusion. But that's all you have to do to keep it minification safe. It is an easy one to miss, because if you don't do that, you know, you'll be running in debug mode, and then you'll push it up to staging, wherever you're going to go. It gets minified, and suddenly your pages just break, and it's not really apparent why. So you just need to make sure that you do that up front as part of your practice. Okay, using it in an ASP.NET app. First thing you really need to do, because you've got all these components, you need to start off with a good folder structure. And this folder structure here is what you see, it's what we're using in the Sasu application at the moment. You can see we've got it defined by the kind of apps that we're using. So that's where we've got our app and configuration definitions. Constants, we've got controllers. And this taxable payment report is one of the features that we implemented in SASU not long ago. And so we've got our controls that apply to it on that page. We've got directives, factories, filters, templates, services. So we've broken it all up. Because you can imagine, you know, if you, after you get, so let's say you've got 10 pages in your app and each page can have, you know, 10 controllers. If you've got it all in a flat structure, you know, it gets kind of unwieldy and hard to find. So just make sure you start off with a good folder structure first up. You'll find it much easier rather than have to retrofit that kind of folder structure and then adjust all your paths and everything like that. It just makes it much easier. And, you know, things become much easier to find as well. You don't have to do this, but we certainly did. We got rid of the jQuery validation or the unobtrusive stuff. There's no temptation to use it. You can make it work with Angular if you choose, make it work in you know, on pages that aren't using Angular, that kind of thing. But you know, we're choosing again in SASU, we're choosing to use Angular and that kind of form of validation. So wherever we use it, we get rid of jQuery validation and unobtrusive. Less scripts you have, the better. And you just don't want to cause any conflicts. You know, I can't predict what conflicts might occur as part of if you've got these two validation things working on the same page. So that's kind of a risk you'd have to take. jQuery, I would keep it in. Angular comes with a jQuery Lite. So in directives, you saw me doing an element bind. You could bind to a click event. That's if you haven't got jQuery included, that'll be jQuery Lite. That's Angular's very subset implementation of jQuery. It doesn't support all selector syntaxes and things like that. You know, jQuery is just nice, I think. So when you include it, Angular will use jQuery instead of its own jQuery Lite. So I would recommend keeping it in there. It's just a much nicer way to traverse the DOM, in my opinion anyway. You don't have to. Load Angular early. Most best practices suggest that you should put all JavaScript down below in the page so it doesn't hold things up. And because Angular needs to do data binding and things like that, you don't want sort of this flash of unbound content. There are other ways around it, but ideally you want Angular to kick in early on your Angular page. That way, all the goodness of Angular is happening nice and early. You don't have to wait for those things to happen. Conditionals in Common View to enable Angular. This is more in the older apps where you're trying to retrofit Angular, and it was certainly the case in SASU where we were using that. And what I mean by that is that in SASU we got heaps of JavaScript. Some old pages use prototype and things like that. We don't always want to include Angular. Always want to include Angular. We don't always want to enable it either. But, you know, when we do, we do. So what we're doing, if I have a look at the actual page, the stuff for this demo, if I have a look at the layout. Now what I'm doing here is saying, all right, kind of creating a little bit of a standard. So what we've said is if you put an Angular app name on the view bag, we're going to assume that you want an Angular application. So if it's not null, we're setting Angular enabled flag, and we grab out the name. If Angular is enabled, then we make sure we include it. Similarly, if Angular is enabled down here, we put an ng app on the body and substitute in the Angular app name. So on any subsequent pages, such as, go over here, we just have to include that. And it includes a script for us and sets up the Angular application or the Angular module. And that way, on some of the old legacy pages, that you know, who knows what could happen in terms of conflicts, you can pretty much guarantee that there will be no conflicts because you haven't explicitly included or defined an Angular app name, in this case on the view bag, but you can do it a whole number of ways. So that's worked quite well for us. We've experienced no conflicts so far, so it's pretty good. Always test in release mode. I mentioned this goes back to the minification. It's very easy sometimes to forget, particularly if you're looking at samples and you're just trying to work out how to do this particular complex function and you haven't done the minification part, gets up to staging or at worst, you know, in production, and things just fall over in a screaming heap. Just make sure you test in release mode while you're in Visual Studio, you know, whack on the release or modify the web config so it looks like release mode and just give it a run through. Visual Studio 2013 has some Angular IntelliSense extensions, which is really nice. And ReSharper as well, which is what I'm using. I'm on 2012 at the moment, has some extensions. I'll just show you those. Let's see. So if we go into here, let's say I go data dash. You can see all this IntelliSense going on here. Or maybe you can. Let's see if I can zoom that in. There you go. You can see that's ReSharper doing that. So I think it's ReSharper 7.1 that I've got. So if you're running that, you can go to the ReSharper site. Okay, thanks. You can go to the ReSharper site and download it. I've got a link at the end of this which you'll be able to do that. SideWaffleCom. Mads Christensen, who is around here at the moment, did some presentations earlier, has created this SideWaffleCom which allows extensions in Visual Studio. And what you can see here is some Angular templates that we can use. And just quickly, I can do stuff like add new item, go side waffle, say, oh, I want an Angular controller. Call it Fuzz Buddy. And it gives me the basic template for a controller. Now this is based, I think John Papa initially contributed this stuff, so you know you could contribute your own Angular templates if you like, if you didn't like this particular one, but this gives you a nice starting point as well. Okay, there we go. Just quickly, AngularJS and KnockoutJS. I thought it was worth comparing, even though it's not quite a fair comparison. KnockoutJS obviously comes with a lot of the templating stuff in Visual Studio for things like MVC and whatnot. I won't get through all of them too much, but basically, KnockoutJS is all about being imperative, which I mentioned before. I'll show you some code very quickly. But KnockoutJS is purely data binding. AngularJS, I would hope, as you've seen here, has a lot more to it than data binding. Data binding is one of the more powerful aspects, but with things like routing and directives, all the locale support, a heap of stuff in Angular, the separation of concerns, it's just a lot more. It is a framework, whereas KnockoutJS is purely a data binding thing. There's a link here which gives you a performance test of it. According to that, AngularJS is a little faster in terms of noticeable difference. I don't know. I haven't seen any. So, it says that it's faster. I guess it's taken some time to do some tests on it. But, practical-wise, I don't think you'd see that much difference. For the most part, again, KnockoutJS is purely about data binding. Just quickly. You could use both, absolutely. No, none that I'm aware of, and I have seen it used together. Where are we? AngularJS compared. So when you're doing a knockout binding, you might create some data, and you have to make these guys observable and apply binding. So you can see you're actually doing very programmatic stuff there. Whereas with Angular, though you've got to use the scope, it's just a literal object. So in terms of imperative versus declarative, it's up to you. But that's the basic difference. I like using just general basic JSON objects and literal data. KnockoutJS prefers that imperative syntax. The actual data binding syntax is very similar. It's just more about setting up that data. Testing. I won't go a lot of detail into testing, but you've seen how you can inject services, scope, all those kinds of things into controllers. In a test, you can do exactly the same, so that makes it much, much easier to test. So you can prepare up your data, so you can create dummy services, much like you would on the server side, to dummy up data and just test the functionality of your controller. We use QUnit in Sassu, which works quite well, but there's plenty of other samples for things like Jasmine and Karma as well. Just make sure you integrate it early into your build process, because it can take some time to get working. We use Team City with a few other add-ons to make that work. It does take a bit of time to set up. A few general tips and tricks. Keep controllers lean, just like you would an MVC. If your controller's growing to paragraphs and paragraphs, you might want to look at separating it out into multiple controllers. Don't be tempted to change the DOM in the controller. I talked about that earlier. You'll find your data binding will bust. It can be made to work. Angular UI, if you're familiar with jQuery UI, is kind of the same type of thing, just very quickly. It's just a set of directives that you can apply. So you can see I've got a tooltip where I hover over. You saw that before on the forms validation. I've got a modal I can open up. Star control. And of course, this wonderful carousel that we see here. And this is all done just through through easy to apply directives, which I'll show you in a second. Okay. Angular UI. Okay, so for the tooltip, I've just got a tooltip directive, tooltip trigger when I'm on mouse enter, and the placement is right. So it couldn't get much easier than that. For the dialogue, I'm just saying, all right, modal directive here should operate off this variable on the scope. So if that's true, it opens. If that's false, it closes. And these clicking of the buttons just set that on the scope. The star rating control. We've got a classic star rating. We've got this directive set on it, the maximum, the value of it. So it's all just declarative. You know, on hover, we want to call into this function. It's all just declarative on the element itself. It's pretty small. You know, the actual amount of code there is quite small. You can see exactly what it's doing. And it's very clear as to what's happening in the HTML. For the carousel, we're actually using the custom HTML variant. So we're saying, all right, the carousel, and the interval is that, which is just a variable on the scope. And for each slide element, which is obviously the inner element of that carousel, we're going to repeat for the number of slides. And if I just quickly look at Angular UI, we've just defined these slides on the scope. They're just hard-coded to images. You know, we're just doing an ng repeat and inserting an image and a div with some text. So that's all that section there. It's pretty small, and that gives you this, you know, this awesome carousel, which is pretty cool. And this is all part of Angular UI, which you can download for free and just include into your app. It does have reliance on Bootstrap at the moment, but you know, that's not too bad, I think. Debugging, very quickly, if you use debugger in your JavaScript, it'll work, it'll stop, it'll break in the debugger, and when you hit play, your data binding tends to not work. So if you're using debugger, just be aware of that. If you hit play after it stops and nothing happens, it's not actually you doing anything wrong, it just tends to stop. Look for exceptions thrown in the console, so it's pretty good at reporting, reporting exceptions in the console. So if you misspell a controller in the console of Firefox or Chrome, it'll say, oh, couldn't find a controller, and it'll give you a big stack trace for it. The error reporting is actually getting better in the next version. Batarang is a Chrome add-in for debugging, and I'll show you that in a second. I'll load it up. It kind of works okay in the current version of Chrome. It's really designed to work with the Canary. So if we have a look at this, let's go AngularJS. And this is the Batarang add-in here. If I click on enable, it shows you kind of what scopes you've got. And if I was running Canary, it would actually give me the values and allow me to play around with that. If I have a look at the dependencies there, you can see, let's call this up. You can see it's showing me what kind of dependencies I've got, which is pretty cool. However, if you don't have Batarang or Chrome Canary, what you can also do is, let's say we want to have a look at this guy here, and we'll go in the console. So I've just used the element selector to click this guy here. I'll go in the console and I'll say, all right, Angular element, which is one of the options off the Angular object. And I'm going to look at the $0 element, which is in Chrome and Firefox the item that you've just selected. You can see it gives me an item there, and it's highlighting it for me. What I can say is, all right, what scope is attached to that? So, all right, well, that's the scope. Let's have a drill into that. Let's have a look at this detail point. And while we're there, let's change the text and say, almost done. I hit enter. Nothing actually happens at the moment because we've executed outside of Angular's sort of running phase or its digest phase. So what I need to do is say $ apply, and you can see it gets changed up here. Okay, it's an interesting way of being able to examine the scope attached to an element by just clicking on it and then examining it from that point on. And that's about it. I hope it's been informative for you. I hope it's certainly enlightened you for how AngularJS works, some of its advantages. These are all the resources, obviously, but if you go to that angularjsdemo.azurewebsites.net, you'll be able to browse this anyway, and this is all at the end. And you'll also, there's a link down, link up there just to download the actual source code for everything on there as well. Okay, so I hope you've enjoyed it. Thank you for coming along such an early hour. Enjoy the rest of Tech Ed. Yes, no.